Good Tuesday morning. Is it Tuesday? It is Tuesday. It absolutely is Tuesday. I'm Ed Marlowe, Edward Marlowe here in studio with Neil Bradley, Murray, Kentucky, for those who inquired. Neil, we missed out last week. How you doing, man?
Have we missed out like a week or two or just one
it
week?
It always feels like it's an eternity when you and I don't record because we have tried to record every week for the last 6 years. We've had a couple of breaks in that 6 year span, but
we even recorded last year like during the pandemic, which was right before the pandemic. There was no sports going on.
No, not at all.
I mean, we were just having to. If you'll listen to those, we were just making stuff up.
Really. I think so.
Nothing was true.
No, not at all.
At all. We were just like, well, I don't have anything. Let's just make it up.
Well, it's fake news.
Yes. That was, I mean, back then,
we wanted to add
no matter what happened in the community, if it was a sports-related story, it got tons of ink.
Absolutely.
Murray State Rifle has signed somebody. That's a 45-second story right
there. Yeah, we'll do it right here. Hey, listen, no story is too small for me.
It is.
And for us. And obviously, like I said, it's been 10 days maybe since you and I recorded. Last week, here's what we've got going on at the dishwasher and I's house, which at some point I want to make a t-shirt that just says the dishwasher.
Did she like that? Did she, when I said that, what happened?
It sticks. It has stuck.
Really?
It has.
So she doesn't, I figured she would hate me for that.
Like, not at all.
That
no.
Jerk.
She actually thinks.
When I see him, I'm going to punch him in the face.
She thinks it's funny.
Okay.
And so we've got some house renovations going on. I recently got a new job. We were taking care of a puppy. It's just wild. All of these things that are all happening. So you and I didn't get to record last week. And actually, it's a relatively good thing because now we've got a few extra things to talk about. Obviously, Murray State men's basketball picked up a big-time signee. We had the unfortunate passing of Cal Luther, the legendary men's basketball coach at Murray State, UT Martin. John Morant and Cameron Payne completed their big time years in the NBA. Murray State baseball playing for first place now after a big weekend. They're 29-21, and then just lots of other little things that have happened all in that 10 to 11 day span. So it's been a really busy time of year.
And it's my 19th anniversary today, so I need to get out of here so I can go eat some steak.
It's your 19th anniversary?
Yes.
With D?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep.
You're going through the Big D and don't mean Dallas.
That's it. You got it.
I love that song.
As I tell D, I've been married for 25 years when we count the other marriage, but
right.
She doesn't like me bringing that up. But it's 19 with her, yes.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Congratulations, man.
Well, congratulations to me and
to your steak.
Poor pity on D to have to put up with 19 years of this.
Where are you going to get steak?
Well, we go to Longhorn. That is our go-to place.
That's delicious. So you're going to Paducah?
Flo's Filet?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Flo's Filet, delicious steak. That's just where we're going.
You go, like filet mignon?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. Now, here, before we move forward into sports, the test of a real man, how do you get your steak?
I like it medium.
Thank you.
I can't hardly go rare.
We can continue
rare
with this podcast.
Rare is like when it's cold inside, like what's the point? Cook the steak.
Well, I'm a big fan of it being cold inside because then it's cold.
I don't
like
to hear that.
It's cold like my heart.
Is that right?
I'm fine with that.
I don't like that.
I actually like rare, and I actually don't mind steak tartare. But I will say that medium is my favorite way to eat steak because it's just, I feel like that's probably the best cooked full. But I actually like a rare steak. It doesn't bother me at all.
There's a dude that used to run a florist here named Art Jewell. Art was a good dude. Really liked him. He advertised with us. Good guy. One day, he was a kind of an amateur chef. He brought out a huge tray of beef tartare and put it out on the front. And
he brought it out
like one morning about 8. And then at 5, it all went in the trash. No one touched it at all. It was raw meat. So that's where, I guess... smart eating, or whatever the heck you call that, sophisticated eating,
met
with rurals, and like cook that stuff and I'll eat it. So yeah, no one even touched a bite of it.
If you can't eat anything less, like I'll even eat medium well. You know, if it's been on the steak like an extra minute or two, I'm not going to get mad about it. But like well done, if I want well done, I'll just eat a hamburger.
It's cremated. It's
steak, yeah, it's cremated, exactly. My father-in-law gets his hamburgers and his steak well done, and I've finally been able to talk him down. Now, I'll give him credit. Part of the reason that he eats a well-done steak is he worked in a butcher shop all those years. So after, curating and seeing the draining and the full process, maybe you get a little scarred from that,
right.
And you're a little frustrated. You're like, okay, I gotta cook everything because I'm tired of seeing the red. But I'm not. I got to have like the light pink center, and actually a little blood doesn't bother me. See, it's actually not blood though. It's like muscle.
Okay.
It's muscle tissue. So.
But I can actually handle any of that on the steak end. I don't care which end of the spectrum you're from well done to rare.
Yeah.
But when you get your steak and you put ketchup on it.
Yep.
No.
Yeah. Get out.
No. You don't need to be in this country. If I'm ever king, you're gone.
Yeah.
Or at least we're going to have one little state for the people who have ketchup. And you can go there.
Yeah, and it's the ketchup. It's the state of suck.
I don't know what you'll call it, but you can't stay here.
The state of suck. Yeah, it's the suck state because you can't put ketchup on your steak. It's awful.
No. And to me, when you put sauce on it, you're sort of saying, well, it's so bad, I'm going to have to put sauce on it just so I can make it edible.
And that's why I feel bad for A1 because I actually love the taste of A1 and even Worcestershire. But, like, if you're going to use A1 in Worcestershire, cook it with your steak. Like, don't use the sauce post-steak, or it's not good. Marinate. We've just gone into a food podcast, and didn't even know it.
All right. We'll do that.
I had to ask, though, because, like, I think it truly defines the person. Like, if you eat a well-done steak, I just think you're a failure as a human being. Maybe that's a little...
That doesn't bother me.
Maybe that's a little far, but it's a little staunch.
But I don't like them well done.
I have
eaten them before.
Yeah.
We have a friend of ours who he puts, while he's cooking them, he lathers on sugar-based sauce.
Oh, I love
sugar.
So
it's nice and crunchy.
There's a crunch on it, yeah.
And those are not good either when it's well done. I just do not like
when it's not when it's well done, yeah. But if you do a medium with like a sugar bay, like with a like a rub, I could do a crunch.
Well, this was always burnt. I don't like that.
That's unfortunate. Well, speaking of burnt, pretty sure the nets of the Murray State men's basketball team, the nets, the actual nylon nets, will be burnt this next year. That's literally a stretch.
So.
But I'm stretching that in the sense that Murray State men's basketball has completed its recruiting class this past week, past 10 days, when they picked up a key transfer, another graduate transfer, and a surprise to a lot of people, Eastern Illinois forward, 6'6", 230-pounder, and Little Rock, Arkansas native, Jordan Skipper Brown. Who, I noticed this, and I want to mention this, I thought it was really funny. You saw the highlights come up, you know, mm-hmm. Murray State put out their highlights tape. Didn't exactly put any Eastern Illinois versus Murray State highlights last year. And that's because,
Could have, because
Eastern Illinois beat the Racers twice, and the second time around, Jordan Skipper Brown had a big-time game in Murray. 14 points, 10 rebounds, 4 blocks, did a little bit of everything, and here's what he did last year, Neil. He averaged 10.2 points, 5.6 rebounds, 1.1 assists, shot fairly well from the field, north of 55%. Kind of an inside guy. Did go 4 for 12 from 3. Had a couple of big games in non-conference play. Opened the season with a really nice game against Wisconsin. Of course, that did end up being about a 20-25 point loss for EIU, but it was Wisconsin. But where Skipper Brown really started to figure things out was the month of February. And I know you and I have looked at the numbers. That last 2 weeks of the season, 3 weeks of the season, I mean, he averaged north of 15 points and 8 rebounds a game and scored 100, I believe, almost 100 points combined in 5 games. Just got really, really hot toward the end of the season. Scored in double digits in 7 of the last 9 games of the season, and one of those games being against the Racers. So he was a problem. And from an athletic standpoint, this is another guy, you know, that can get it done and has produced at this level. So what are your thoughts? I know a lot of people were probably looking at maybe 6'8", 6'9", 6'10". Everybody kind of keeps talking about, well, who's going to back up KJ? Who's going to back up KJ? I don't know if he really can back up KJ. KJ's his own animal. He's 6'10". He shoots the 3. Has become a pretty good free throw shooter. Can score it inside. He's got a nice 15-foot jumper. I don't really know who comes in and does the same thing as that at that size. What are your thoughts on the addition of Jordan Skipper Brown?
I thought it was a great one. You have a guy who has the Division I experience. Not like if you get a JUCO, no matter how good they are, it almost always takes them a little while to adjust. Do not see that being an issue.
Right.
I think he can step right in. He can be a guy that can get double-digit points. He can get you 7 or 8 rebounds. He'll block a shot here or there. Can make a 3. Probably won't be called on to do much of that, but you know, if he's open and they pass the ball around once or twice, I'm sure they'll be happy with him taking it.
Sure.
It's a good addition and made possible with the change in the transfer rules. Normally, in past years, couldn't do that in conference. It was disallowed in most conferences. There were conference rules. They were not NCAA rules. But those have been pushed to the side, and now you can go in and with the transfer. He's a one-year guy.
Right.
So the Racers will have him for one season, but I think it's a really, really good one. Sometimes you get that last scholarship. It's a guy that may not see much playing time. I think he'll see significant playing time and be a contributor.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, it's really hard to say where the roster's headed as far as minutes are concerned. I mean, it's way too early to even have that conversation, but just for the sake of having a conversation, you take a look at this recruiting class now, Neil, and I crunched some numbers over the weekend and wrote a little bit about it when Skipper Brown announced his transfer. And I'm, first of all, I do want to say I'm glad you mentioned that. The rule has changed. You are now allowed in multiple conferences. A lot of conferences waived that rule because they knew they were going to lose their talent if they didn't allow for student athletes to stay within their conference. And from a conference safety and a health standpoint, and I mean health as in health of the league, you want to keep your talent. And Jordan Skipper Brown had a great year for Jay Spoonhour in those couple of years. He came from McClellan Junior College. As a matter of fact, coming out of junior college in 2019, he had a couple of offers. One of them was Iona. So, I mean, this is a guy that was on a couple of radars and just happened to, you know, choose Jay Spoonhour's staff and that team. So, Skipper Brown is now in a class with Trey Hannibal from South Carolina, Carter Collins from A-10 Davidson, another, the other graduate transfer, mm-hmm. Elijah Farr from Olney, and DJ Burns from Southern. So you have five guys. It's a lot of things here that I'm seeing. Number one, these five guys combined for more than 200 points and more than 100 rebounds than the five guys who left. There's a lot more production at the D1 level coming in with this recruiting class. It's an immediate infusion of D1 talent. Now, granted, Elijah Farr was junior college, so it's a little different.
Right.
But the other four guys all come in with considerable Division I experience. The least experience being DJ Burns, because his season was shortened due to undisclosed reasons. But I've been told he's 100% healthy and ready to go for the summer. So it's all part of the deal. But you've got a lot of experience, particularly at some high level. I don't think people really understand what Carter Collins can bring to this team. Here's a guy who played in the A-10. It's a top 12 conference last year. Put up 20-something points against Vanderbilt. He's had two or three. We've already talked about him, but it's just you take a look at these five guys combined, what they're going to be able to bring from a lift perspective, from an accountability perspective, and it's going to be a hell of a summer fighting for minutes, I think. Because, I mean, you look at the returnees, you look at guys that are trying to get better, you look at where Tevin Brown and KJ are going to be with their games as elder statesmen, and it's a relatively experienced class. The other thing that I was going to mention, I think it's interesting, there's no freshmen. You had five scholarships, and Murray State men's basketball, for the first time in a while, did not pick up a freshman at all. Picked up guys with decent experience left, years of eligibility to help the program. So you didn't stagnate anywhere, but you didn't get a true freshman. And I think a lot of that is two factors. One, you needed some older people in the locker room. But two, they really like the young guys that are coming back. And, you know, at some point, they're going to need time on the floor as well.
And so, they get the extra year, too. So you kind of have freshmen without having freshmen.
If they choose to have it, exactly Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing the roster flip. Like, where...
Right.
Like, when Dave announces the roster, we're going to see freshman, who's sophomore, who stayed.
Right.
And where's Matt Smith, you know, after missing last year? Is he still a sophomore? Is he freshman? Or, like, these types of things are all going to have to be evaluated and determined over the next few weeks and make those decisions.
Thing so. I like, the group as a whole, too, physicality as a whole, defense, and good free throw shooting.
And offensive rebounding.
As a whole.
Yeah.
You get all that. And those were areas that were a little up and down at times. And I think Matt moved to take care of those issues as a whole with that signing class.
Yeah, you just have to have a little bit of consistency in some of the smaller stats. Offensive rebounding and free throw shooting, I don't mean to make – free throw shooting is not small. It's extremely important. But there were times last year that even though the percentage was decent, there were times where it was just too inconsistent. And the same with rebounding. There were times when the rebounding was monstrous and terrific, but there were other times where the rebounding took a dip and it really struggled. And I just don't know if there's going to be a dip in rebounding and a dip in defense this year. You've got guards that want to defend and pass the ball well. That's the other thing I also I just mentioned almost 100 more assists, or almost 50 more assists, excuse me, with these guys than the previous, you know, five that were here. Got guys that want to pass the ball, guys that want to make smart shots, and guys that want to hit their free throws, and guys that want to rebound. And those are just critical critical parts of basketball. This recruiting class, in my opinion, is a home run.
I believe so. I look for good things from it. The thing that we don't know yet, scheduling-wise, that's still out there.
Yeah.
And there is, it's not just us. I was looking. There's hardly no scheduling information. And I think with COVID, a lot of reluctance to schedule a lot of things. With the past week's news, it looks as if we're moving a little more forward to probably being normal from a crowd standpoint everywhere,
right,
travel standpoint. And if that happens, I think you'll start to see a lot of the scheduling open up. And I don't know how challenging the out-of-conference schedule is going to be in terms of additional games, but we do know the games that are likely on the schedule, this team will be very well tested early on, and then we'll see what happens with the 18-game OVC schedule.
Yeah, I mean, and I, like I said, the depth will be there. I mean, I don't know if McMahon plays 10 guys again. I don't know about that. Yeah. But from a competition standpoint, the guys are there, and it's going to be, as I usually say, it's going to be a lot of fun. Should be fun. Just seeing what those practices are going to be like. On the unfortunate side of things with Murray State men's basketball, you know, the recent passing of Murray State men's basketball head coach and UT Martin head coach in Cal Luther. And Neil, you had a nice anecdote. Your love of Racer athletics, and particularly Murray State men's basketball, started with Cal Luther.
Yeah, the early 70s. I don't remember the date. I guess you could go look it up. But the Racers were hosting Western Kentucky, top 10 team in the nation, neighbor up the road. Knew I was a basketball fan at the time. The only station that I knew I could get basketball on, it was local high school basketball. Occasionally could get a UK game, so listen to that. Said I was going to a Murray State game. Chat with my dad. He said, yeah, you could go. I remember we left extremely early, like 4 o'clock, 4:30, something like that. Got there. We had a line from Cutchin Fieldhouse back to where you get Regents Whitehall. It was insane. So you stood in line. Eventually you got in. But back then they had the freshman game, so we saw the freshman game. And by the time the varsity game tipped off between Murray and Western, there was not a seat to be had. All the people were sitting in the stairways. You had to pardon yourself up to the bathroom. They were 4, 5, 6 deep at the top. Back then, you could still smoke in the arena, ring a smoke up at the top.
That's amazing.
So, but it was a dynamite game. The Racers won. I became a fan for life. But Cal Luther coached team and followed them through all the years of Claude Verdon, Hector Blondet, Frank Streety, all those guys, Big Cat, and just one after another. And he really impacted so much, you know, helped break the color barrier at Murray State, was just an amazing person from an accomplishment standpoint. But when you met Cal, he was just a nice man, just a great gentleman, and did so much, not just for Racer athletics, but virtually everywhere he went, he brought some level of success with him.
Neil, while you were going through that, I actually did a quick search, and I believe I found it.
Okay.
Let's see if this jogs the memory. Western Kentucky, at least according to the AP poll, on Saturday, January 23rd, 1971, Western was ranked 7th in the country.
That sounds about right.
And Murray State won 73-71.
That's it. It was just, I mean, electrifying.
Let's go back. I want to look. I'm right on the sports reference page here. Cal Luther that season in 70-71, the Racers went 19-5. They were 10-4, second in the OVC. They were top 40 in defense in the country. They had one of the their strength of schedule lacked a little bit, but that's okay. It's like I said, top 40 defense. Here's that team: Jimmy Young, Les Taylor, Hector Blondet, Ron Johnson, Bill Mancini, Ron Williams, Gary Steverson,
I don't remember that one.
Fred Towns, Will Luther, which I do believe is that Cal's son.
I don't think so. No.
No.
No. No. He was the first 7-footer we signed. He was a dud. So
Will Luther, 7-footer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's awful.
And Steve Brown. And your top three scorers that year were Young, Taylor, and Blondet.
Yeah. Jimmy Young had the flowing hair, long blonde hair, and he was an assistant. Actually, he was a high school basketball coach in Clarksville, he would come to all the racer and Austin Peay games, and like, it's like, Jimmy, where's your hair, man? You know, his hair is gone.
Yeah, you got to bring it back, man. Like,
but that's how I remembered him. Les Taylor, best defender I've ever seen in the history of Murray State basketball. There isn't anyone better than Les Taylor. And sorry, and I think Jawan Long's terrific. Les is the best I've ever seen. He was locked down.
They closed that regular season. They did lose to Western Kentucky the second to last game of the season, but another good one. And it was actually at Western, 73-59, and then they beat Middle to close the season on March 1st, 1971. And that's there's no OVC tournament. It looked like there's just postseason.
They did it for years. You go right
into a postseason.
It was hard to imagine. I went to that game, and then years later would be doing the games for the Racers.
Yeah.
Just mind-blowing to me.
Well, I mean, you said pre-show, we were talking about this. I mean, you listen to 1340 WNBS yourself, trying to get it.
Could barely pick it up where I lived in Marshall County.
That's crazy.
I could get it, but barely. Tried to get it on the internet, but, you know, it hadn't been invented yet. And I had no device to get it. So because of all those things, it was just pretty much the radio.
You had to radio in the newspaper.
That was it.
You had to read it. That's wild, man. Yeah, my memories of Cal Luther, of course, are very different. You know, I never had a private one-on-one conversation with him, but we had a couple of media pools with Racer Hoopalooza. Cal, obviously, being a speaker at Hoopalooza. He was very extemporaneous on this particular evening.
I don't think he ever forgot a fact.
No.
I mean, he knew tiny details of everything.
He went into a very nice, long diatribe, actually.
Yes.
Similar to a bladder-bursting
diatribe for all the people there.
It was. It was. But it was interesting to
hear. That was great. Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I know that strained some people. Strained media, because I was looking at my phone, and I'm like, how am I going to just ingest these quotes? Because you have to remember, you know, as a print journalist, it's easy to do the audio part of this. You just talk and you have the recording.
Yeah.
And you either listen to it or you don't. And as a viewer, that's your choice. As a writer, trying to dissect and get quotes back onto paper and into a cogent and thoughtful series of events for someone to read and not put the paper down and be just completely bored with it, very difficult. And Cal, on this particular evening for Racer Hoopalooza, went into multiple stories. And you're just like, well, where do I pick? Like, so yeah. When I got finished with my story, yeah. I had like 15 quotes. I just picked 5 of them, and I was like, here's another quote box.
Yeah.
Because he just was a fount of knowledge.
Yeah, he was.
Believe Cal was 93.
Yeah.
When he passed. Yeah. When you live a century almost, you got a lot going on.
I have one moment at UT Martin I want to bring up.
Sure.
And it says a lot about where Martin was at the time. They're doing better now. But for the first time in the history of UT Martin basketball, Cal Luther head coach, they beat the Racers at UT Martin. Wow. Let's go celebrate.
Yeah.
Fans started to flood the floor, and the PA guy says, please leave the arena and get off the floor. We have a dance. If I was the AD, I would have grabbed the mic and hit the guy over the head with it.
We have a dance.
Please get out. Please get out of the building. We'll dance whenever we're done celebrating this win. Unbelievable.
We have a dance.
We have a dance. Please leave.
We have a promenade.
You just beat the Racers. Come on, let the guy have his moment.
You dance, yeah.
Jeez.
And at no point, and I'm sure Cal relished that too, you know, and how long he'd been
at
Murray State and then had taken the job at UT Martin, built them up. And
he had to take it because I asked him whenever Martin and Semo were in the league, they had a waiting period where they couldn't go to the NCAA tournament. They were ineligible for the conference championship because of transition from D2 to D1. And Cal said, I assume Murray State as well, said all the OVC coaches use that against them. They tell kids, you do know if you go there, you can't go to the NCAA tournament, right, for 5 years. So if you go, just know you will not be going. So they had to clear that hurdle too. And the fact that he was able to get some good players despite that speaks really well for Cal.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talk a little bit more about Murray State men's basketball, but a little bit more at the NBA level. We've talked a lot about what Ja Morant has done for Memphis this season. We've talked a lot about what Cameron Payne has done for the Phoenix Suns this year. The Phoenix Suns are the number 2 seed in the Western Conference. They finished the season with 51 wins, big time there. And Ja Morant and the Racers finished their season as the number 9 seed in the West, and they're in the tournament play-in. They play tomorrow night. And then the Suns, of course, as the 2 seed, await the 7 seed as the play-in tournament unfolds. And so, you know, Ja, year 2, man, not too shabby. 19.1 points, 4.0 rebounds, 7.4 assists.
That's a good stat line.
That's his second year in the NBA. I mean, you would love to have seen his three-point shooting, which did materialize over the last 2 months of the season. He drug it up from about 20% to 30. So to bring it up 10% means he kind of went on a tear there for a while. Last game against Golden State was tough. The game that would have given them the 8th seed against Golden State if they had won it was at Golden State. This guy known as Steph Curry. You know, one of the
greatest. He was pretty good.
He's pretty good. One of the greatest shooters of all time.
And won another scoring title.
And won another scoring title at 33 years old. I'm proud of you, Neil. That's good. I'm glad you knew that. I know you don't watch the NBA much, but you did see that.
Well, I mean, he joined Joe Fulks as an NBA scoring title.
That he did. And I'm glad you brought that up. We'll bring that up a little bit more here in a minute. But I mean, he scored 46 points. I mean, what do you do? I mean, everybody tried to defend him, and Steph made shot after shot after shot. But you know, just going into Ja's second year, this is a Memphis team that was again picked to struggle. And to be fair, they had some tough losses that will be hard to swallow when you look at all the numbers at the end of the year. You know, a couple heartbreakers there in the last, you know, couple of months of the season. Particularly one I can think of was the Luka Doncic magic three-pointer between two defenders to win when the Racers had them beat. Ja Morant and Memphis had them beat. But to average 19.1 points, 4 rebounds, and 7.5 assists in your second season in the NBA, and you're in the playoffs again, when you were picked probably to be on the outside of the picture with the injury of Jaren Jackson Jr. and a couple of other key injuries in the middle of the season, it just speaks volumes about what they're trying to do in Memphis, again, as one of the younger teams in the NBA. And it's been a lot of fun to watch Ja really just take on the role of ultimate leader for the Memphis locker room.
That's I always notice because I usually give the details, a few details. Valanciunas has been playing great,
terrific,
too, hasn't he?
Yeah,
double-double basically night in, night out for them. And I think Morant, you know, plays a huge role in that as well, getting him the ball where he needs to get it. But it's been amazing to watch Ja's elevation. I still think that he'll improve more because of how hard he works at it.
Yeah.
He works so hard.
Yeah, and look at how hard he worked on his three-point shot. Like, he knew that was a concern coming into this season. The percentage didn't favor him, but he rebounded, had the same percentage roughly than what he did as his freshman year, his rookie year in the NBA. But he took a lot more this year. He knew he was going to have to take more three-pointers to open up the lane more because teams were just going to start locking down the paint because he is a prolific paint scorer. And again, that's something you and I talk a lot about, but it's amazing to see how well he scores in the paint, considering that's what we thought would be, and I say we, I just mean generally, people thought in the public eye, how is he physically going to be able to score against this big size in the NBA? Well, here's how. You know, he's going to detonate in the paint. People have no idea how quick he is within 8 feet of the cup, and that's how he is so effective, especially in transition. You take a look at Cameron Payne, totally different role. You got Ja, who's playing 12 minutes in the first quarter, then the last 6 to 8 minutes of the second quarter, then half of the third quarter, and then closing time, most of the fourth. Then you've got Cameron Payne, who on the record earlier this week with ESPN's Zach Lowe said, you know, he knows he's coming in after 6 minutes in the game. He's a key reserve. He's got to come in, bring the juice. Well, what has he done this year? Averaged 8.4 points, 3.6 rebounds, 2.4 assists on 48.4% shooting, 89% from the free throw line, and 44% from the arc.
Wow. Those are great numbers.
It's great numbers. He's averaging about 16 minutes a game. He comes in, gives 6 minutes in the first quarter, about 6 minutes in the second quarter, 2 to 3 minutes in the third quarter, and then there maybe early in the fourth quarter, you know, while they're giving the key starters the last bit of a break before they're going to play the final 8 to 10 minutes of the game, that's Cam's job. And Cam has come in to the point where he's probably one of the top glue guys in the NBA, at least this past season. Zach Lowe recently just put him on his, this is the 10th year he's done this, on like his Luke Walton all glue guy team. And where that stems from is Luke Walton was a terrific glue guy for the Los Angeles Lakers. Bill Walton's son, now coach of the Sacramento Kings, was a former Lakers head coach. Big time guy who was a key reserve for some of those Kobe Bryant teams. If you know your role, I hate to say it that way, it's such a cliche thing to say, but in the NBA especially, I think what gets overshadowed a lot is the NBA isn't just full of stars. I mean, don't get me wrong, every team has its elite players. Every team has its max contract guys, the guys that are literally like selling all the jerseys. But there's 10 other guys out there that are just 8 to 10 point guys that are the pieces that fit the jigsaw puzzle. And now Cameron is one of those jigsaw puzzles for the Phoenix Suns. And this is a guy that was literally on the precipice of not playing professional basketball anymore within about 18 months ago, right before COVID hit. Because he was playing for the Texas Legends in the G League at that point with the Dallas Mavericks. And then when they went to the bubble, they went a different direction. And Monty Williams, his former head coach at Oklahoma City, said, "Hey, man, Phoenix needs help." And sure enough, he comes to the bubble. We talked a lot about his success in the bubble. And you think, well, is that bubble going to burst? Or does he get into the NBA, you know, and play a full season?
Right.
60 games later, Cameron Payne is a gel spot for the two-seeded Phoenix Suns, who were one game within the Utah Jazz of being the overall number one team and the best record in the league. Unbelievable turn of events for this young man who's now probably looking at a decent contract his next time up.
And playing well enough that if due to injury, foul trouble, illness, they had to push him a few extra minutes, you don't feel bad. It's not like, well, we got to get this dude out of here. It's okay to push him a few extra minutes because of the numbers that he's putting up, and he's become dependable. That's how you win championships, is with people like that on your team. Superstars are great. You got to have those two.
I mean, Phoenix has.
But you also have to have some of those guys to help you get it over the line.
Yeah, I don't want to overstate this. I mean, Cameron's not running in there and averaging 20, 10, and 5. It's not that. I mean, they have Chris Paul, Hall of Famer. Devin Booker, potential future Hall of Famer with the way that he scores. DeAndre Ayton, elite center. Bridges has been really good. There's a couple of other guys for the Phoenix Suns have been. Jay Crowder, who's been a relatively strong veteran. I know, right? You got a picture of him right here in the diving in front of you as you're calling that Marquette game. But we've digressed. There's obviously a lot of great players in the Phoenix Suns. He's just a role player, but it's just interesting and fun to watch role players, not just him, but you take a look at the rest of the role players in the NBA, and it's extremely interesting to see a former racer. You know, going back to role players, it's crazy. You mentioned Joe Fultz. Fultz didn't end up being a role player in the NBA. He ended up being a scoring leader who developed the jump shot. Like, the reason that we have a jump shot in the NBA and in college basketball now is because Joe Fultz revolutionized it. And I wish that was more to light. Maybe someday I'll write about it. I don't know. But it's just cool to see Ja do his thing and what his job is as a franchise cornerstone versus Cameron Payne. This is his job. You know, he got to start game 72 because the Phoenix Suns already had the 2 seed locked up. They didn't necessarily even need to win that last game. They came in and won anyways. He put up 16 points as a starter. Six assists, 5 rebounds. So it's like he came in, he was ready to go. And that's what he's been for the last 68 games for the Phoenix Suns. The 8-game bubble and the 60 games he got to play this year out of 72. It's pretty strong. When you can play 85% of your season even as a reserve, that's pretty strong. And I'm happy for Cam. You know, I mean, this is a situation where, I mean, he almost was out of gas at this point. His tank has been refilled. And we'll see what he does in the playoffs. Playoffs start in the next 24 hours. It's going to be a blast to kind of see where Ja and where Cam take their teams over the next few weeks.
And I think he'll be in Murray in June.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, Maybe not. Yeah, with the playoffs. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. This is actually official information that's already been announced, but
it's last year's Hall of Fame class. Just now getting honored.
Will be in town in the middle of June.
Yeah.
Unless he's in the playoffs.
Now, the next Hall of Fame class, I expect an announcement to come on that within the next week or two. Maybe this week, maybe next week, something like that. And the plan is always to have them honored with a basketball game on a Friday night and a football game on a Saturday afternoon.
Yep.
So I don't know where that fits on the schedule. I haven't seen any schedule. But once they make the announcement, they might have that date in there. I don't know that.
It was unfortunate that last year that didn't get to happen. Yeah.
But you don't want to do that virtually.
No, man. Not at all.
Not that. There's some things you could live with, but not that.
Yeah.
You deserve to have your day. And they're going to have it. Going to be out on the football field. I think that's kind of neat.
I think it is kind of neat, too.
And now, the mask requirements, especially outside, if someone wants to wear one, that's fine, but no one's required to.
Right.
That'll make it a lot more normal. We can hear from everybody. Someone will introduce them. We'll get to hear from everyone. It's just really a cool thing.
Yeah, and as long as the weather cooperates, June 11th, the state of Kentucky is actually supposed to be probably 100%, we'll say, back to normal. But, we'll start to work forward. And then, but if you're outdoors, you're exactly right. Yeah. Long the weather cooperates, I think the football field's a great place for it.
It is.
And it might even be that way for the future. As long as the weather is conducive and the temperatures aren't miserable.
Yeah.
I don't want to go out there when it's 95, and you also don't want to go out there when it's 25. So
in an evening in that part of June, you wouldn't think it would be, but it isn't out of the question.
It's true, but it should be pretty close to perfect. So last thing I wanted to discuss here, I did get a text from Kevin Saul as he sent out his email blast to everybody, and I want to tease with this and close out with this. Neil, Murray State baseball is playing extremely well. I will be the first to admit I have had an extremely busy spring, blessed to say that, been really nice to say that, but I've been keeping up with baseball stats and baseball numbers, and the Racers playing for first place.
I've watched about 10 of their games all on TV. That's where I've caught them, thanks to the ESPN Plus.
It's great that you can do that.
But I've watched a bunch of games on TV, and man, they can hit the ball.
Yeah.
When they get pitching, and they've been getting some pitching lately, good enough that that's vaulted them into first place. They got a little bit of fortune their way. I guess you could look at it one way or another. SEMO taking on Morehead State. That would have been a tough series for SEMO.
Yeah.
But had they swept that series, the Racers are in a spot where they can't catch Southeast Missouri unless they stumble. Well, because SEMO didn't play, all the Racers had to do, they were deadlocked going into the weekend. They won 2 out of 3. They're a half game up. Because of COVID, it's going to go by winning percentage. All they have to do is better than SEMO does and avoid getting swept, and they can win an OVC championship.
Yeah, for the first time since...
I don't know. I know the year that they won the tournament, they didn't win an OVC championship.
Right.
Because they were bad at the end of the season, bad enough to not win the championship, but they were good enough to win it.
Let me check my text message here.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Here it is. This is from Kevin Saul. Good morning. Racer baseball currently leads the OVC
when
standings.
When Reader pitched, mm-hmm. because they hosted.
Yep. With 1 weekend remaining, and apparently this weekend, baseball is hosting Austin Peay, which we've already mentioned, for an opportunity to win the program's first regular season OVC championship in 30 years, 91.
Yep.
I was 6.
Kirk Reader. As we would always say, Kirk Reader, like they talk about people could hit a quarter with their control. He would say, do you want me to hit the right side or the left side of the quarter? That's his control.
Yeah, do you want a pluribus unum or do you want in God we trust?
Yeah, that's where his control was.
Actually, is a pluribus unum on the...
I don't know.
I don't know if that's on the quarter, but I know in God we trust is, yeah. But quarter, yeah. Yeah, currently the weather looks great for these 2 days. Would love to see a big crowd at Johnny Reagan Field supporting our guys. Take care and my best, Kevin. Yes, Racer baseball. And here's the deal. First of all, they've already posted a program record 17 wins in conference play. They're 17-10. They're 29-21. I believe they're top 120, top 130 in baseball RPI, which is pretty solid. 16-4 at home, Neil.
Wow.
16-4. When you have won, what's the math on that? That's 20 games, 5. 80% of your games. You've won 80% of your games at home. You're hitting .266 on the year. That's against all teams, not just OVC. Brock Anderson, Jordan Cozart, and Bryson Bloomer have combined for 40 homers. Did I do that math right? Yep, 16 homers for Brock Anderson, 15 for Cozart, 9 for Bloomer. That's 40 of the team's 75 home runs. And they also have, let's see, 18 and 17 is 35, and 9 is 44, 44 doubles. It's a lot of offense just from those three guys, and you've got a lot of guys plugged in around. Sam Gardner's really turning. You mentioned that turning up in pitching.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
He's really rebounded back to his old self, it seems like. You've got Shane Burns pitching pretty well. Pennington is pitching extremely well. I watched him a lot last year during the summer at Brooks Stadium when I was working at the Paducah Sun. They had some baseball going on there, and Pennington was kind of a part of that prospects deal where he was like showcase pitching and staying warm over the summer. That was a really unique opportunity last summer. I was able to cover 10 of those games. I went to almost all of them where they just kept playing each other in interleague squad.
Right.
And just did a different feature every night on a new guy and where they were headed. And that was a lot of fun, actually, to kind of cover that, because that would have been the first summer in 100 years that baseball wasn't played at Brooks Stadium. You know, but things had changed, you know, and people started to figure out we could be outside with COVID regulations. But going back to Racer baseball, it's a huge weekend for the Racers in Johnny Reagan Field. Does look like you're going to have some great weather. Austin Peay's pretty solid baseball club. So it's a little bit of a rivalry there. I mean, in pretty much any sport, I think Murray State and Austin Peay could play tiddlywinks or pickup sticks, and there'd be some angst. But it's a critical situation for baseball. Either way, you're headed to Jackson, Tennessee, to play in the OVC tournament. You've locked that up. Why not make it sweeter with a regular season OVC championship?
That'd be great.
You were talking about you may head down, actually.
Yeah, I think I do have plans on going as long as the schedule works out. If they're playing like a 8 o'clock game or something, I don't know what the pairings are.
Yeah.
But if it's 8, I can't do that. But if it's an afternoon game, I'm going to make it down there and want to watch.
Yeah. It's a big weekend for Racer baseball for sure. And yeah, I mean, who knows what's going to happen.
And it is an odd, because it's two games Thursday, one Friday. I want people to realize it's not the Friday, Saturday like they normally do. They do this usually before the conference tournament week, and then Easter weekend's the only other time that they do this.
And they do that to, like, what, buy time?
Get an extra day of rest, so everybody's well-rested once they get to the tournament.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, this is a one-year deal. I don't know that they've released it, but all the coaches have voted, and the ADs, we're going to go back to the full 8 teams or 6 teams, whatever it happens to be for whichever sport. So this is a one-year deal because of COVID. Next year we'll be back at it, 8 teams ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or 6 or whatever it is.
Man, Neil, crazy. We went from not having much going on to all kinds of stuff going on, man. It's been a lot of fun. Been real fun.
We done?
Yeah, I think so, actually.
Time for me to go get my steak?
Absolutely. Yeah, you get that medium steak from Longhorn. When are you guys leaving for Paducah?
It's up to the wife. I don't know. I'm not in charge of that.
But you're the dishwasher in that.
I do actually wash the dishes at home. And as I've told you, the reason is our setup there, I got like a little ledge, and my dishwashing comes while I'm watching baseball, basketball, football, put the phone up there. It's awesome. So it's cool.
Glad you mentioned that. Let's close with this, Neil. What do you think about Albert Pujols, your buddy with the Dodgers? What do you think?
I'm glad he's with the Dodgers. I love Albert Pujols, but I just didn't see a way to work him in with the Cardinals that was comfortable. I mean, who are you gonna put on the bench? I mean,
yeah,
there's not a DH unless you're playing a team in the American League at their place, and you're gonna put him at first base. I mean, no, you're not gonna do that.
So, no, you're not.
You're not gonna put a Gold Glove guy on the bench. So I just didn't see a way for it to work out comfortably for the Cardinals. There's a DH, could have done it, but I'm glad he's with somebody. Hopefully he'll close out his career. I don't know if he's going to play beyond this season. I don't think so, but you never know.
I saw yesterday he said he has gas in the tank with no plans to retire.
Okay, well, he's 1-for-4 with an RBI, but, I mean, he's slow as can be right now. He's basically catcher speed, and his on-base percentage has declined, his slugging percentage has declined. But tremendous guy. I'm happy for him, but I'm glad he's with the Dodgers and not the Cardinals.
I'd like to see really quick. And again, I'm obviously a Reds fan. Pujols made my life miserable for years and years and years. But the one thing that I will say, nothing but class. I would like to see, and I want to look at numbers really quick, because there are a couple of things that I would actually like to see him accomplish before it's all said and done. Yeah, okay. I was relatively close here. I'd like to see him hit the 2,200 RBI mark, which is relatively possible. He's at 2,113 right now. And I'd like to see him he's above 3,000 hits already. We're good there. Let me see. Where's he at from a home runs perspective? Because that's where, yeah, that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see him hit the 700 home run plateau. He's at 667. Now, you probably have to throw a few grapefruits up at this point, but if he could play 2 more years and squeeze out 15 home runs each year, that'll get him there.
That might be tough.
It'll be tough. But here's what I'm looking at. So in 2020, last year, in a shortened season, 60 games, he still hit 6 homers. 2019, he hit 23 and nearly had 100 RBI. So, yeah, is he the same Albert Pujols? Absolutely not. Could he squeeze out a few more puppies? I mean, his worst season prior to last year, from a home run perspective, was 17 in 2013, and that was a shortened season. He only played 99 games. So if he could just bring that bat around just a little bit faster for the last couple of years, give it the good old college try, which I know he will. Pujols has done nothing but deliver his entire career. But if he could get in there and, like I said, get a couple, like, I just don't want him to kind of get, like, the law dog, Fred McGriff. McGriff is one homer away from 500.
Crime dog.
Yeah, the crime dog. Yeah. Oh, what did I call him?
Law dog.
Law dog. Yeah, he's a crime dog. Sorry. Well, that's right before I was 7, 8, you know. But Fred McGriff.
One of, like, my favorites.
Yeah, too. Absolutely terrific. I want to make sure I have that right. Fred, I believe, is at 499 home runs, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
Like, just sign the guy and let him hit a homer. Here, let me look. Let me make sure I'm right. No, I was a little off. 493.
All right. Well, so, he's not going to hit 7 at his age now.
No, but it would have been great if he could have just given him one more year to get to 500. Because everybody talks about 500 being like the...
Yeah.
And now with Pujols close to 700, that's just such an echelon that I think he deserves to be at with it 667. I mean, you, like I said, you're only 33? Yeah, 33. Just a couple more years, 15 each, 16, he's got it. He needs 16 and 17 to get to 700. I think he could do it. He's already got 5 this year, and we've still got 3/4 of a season to go. So we'll see how it goes, man. We've digressed long enough. And as always, Neil, we appreciate the time.
All right. Thanks to everyone. We'll hopefully see everybody next week.
Yeah, absolutely.